Welcome back. If you've just joined us, you're watching Stockwatch, and joining me in studio this evening to tackle your questions are Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective and Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments. Please send those questions through to us by SMSing stock and the question to 41392, emailing stockwatch at bdtv.co.za or tweeting at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Graham, Nick, nice to see you both there this evening. Yesterday was slightly iffy. Today was properly horrible. We closed well in the red. Everything seemed to get sold off except shares like Impala Platinum, which we'll probably talk about in a minute. Nick, what happened?
Not a good day. So risk off, I think, to a large extent. More trade war sort of discussion, dollar strengthening, which led to EM currencies taking a bit of a bath, and everyone getting some more of these sort of jitters. Not unknown news to us. Over the last 2 months, we got hammered quickly and then recovered somewhat, and volatility is still out there. You know, people are uncertain as to where we go.
Graham, so are we being swept up in an emerging market sell-off, or are there issues pertaining to South Africa that have contributed to the rather toxic conditions that we talk about nightly?
Okay, so the Turkish lira went to an all-time low. Emerging markets, I think, generally are actually holding up quite well. If you think about the prospect of a global trade war with $500 billion of tariffs on Chinese goods. So I think all things considered, we're actually doing reasonably well. Also, the announcement that the expropriation of land without compensation, we're going to change the constitution. All things considered, the rand at 1338, very late in our session. Yeah, we're actually not doing too badly. The interesting thing is the rand is off by, let's call it, 1%, and still our market is down 1.8. That tells you that it's bloody awful up there. I think there were four stocks in the top 40 up. You know, the mighty Sappi, Anglo Gold, Richemont and Bath. That was it. And those two of those are very much the rand story. But some of the local economy stocks, the banks getting really pummeled.
Yeah, and maybe that is more of a local story. What about the exchange itself, which actually came out with results today? Nick, the shares were down 2%, so not necessarily out of line with what happened to the rest of the market. And as far as the performance reported, and we heard from Nicky Newton-King just now, what did you make of it? Because clearly you can see volumes are shrinking and that's starting to affect the business.
So I think there are a couple of headwinds, to be fair. I mean, revenue is up somewhat, but probably less than expectations. Costs and cost containment was good, although a lot was on the staff sort of line. So I'm not sure if that's normalized or sort of once off and transitory. And then I think looking forward, you've obviously got more exchanges that have come, so more competition, not necessarily making a massive dent in the shorter term, but the hurdle is there and ahead of you. And then I think, I mean, more interestingly from that, if you have a look at our mega cap in South Africa being Naspers, and you have a look at some of their stated intention to possibly try, and it's just a sort of potential move over time to reduce the concentration risk in South Africa. What do you think that'll do with volumes if that were to transpire? Not a base case that it will, but certainly if it does, this company is going to really come under a lot of stress. So, the results weren't bad, but longer term, I think it's going to remain challenging.
Yeah, because Graham, you've got nothing to make up for NASPAS, and if you've already had SAB Miller gone from the exchange, and that used to account for a big portion of the volumes traded daily.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine Nikki must be on the phone to Bob saying, hey.
Stay.
Now, see here.
Don't It's not go. Done. It's not done. I think the other interesting thing is there's been obviously a global push towards passive. And I think that's probably, that together with algo trading and a few technical things, is probably pushing volumes, but it's not really translating necessarily into rands and cents as much for the exchanges. Just one other slightly different angle on this. Quite a few years ago, the JSE bought the bond exchange, and they sort of launched currency futures and with the commodity futures. And interestingly, things like the commodity futures, maybe currencies that are helping them. But I agree with Nick. I remember a colleague of mine 10 years ago used to describe them as the only toll road into town, and that's exactly what they were. There are these other ulterior routes, let's be honest, the likes of Zarex, but they are sort of not the smoothest roads. They're sort of very much still dirt roads, but they will gain appeal. But also, I think what's going to happen is you're going to find that there's going to be a lot of downward pressure on fees. What the JSE did do, and I think a lot of people said it was long overdue, they did, I think they reduced the headcount by almost 17%. It was quite a big, if you look at the results, a nice kicker courtesy of lower personnel costs. But these are things that you do kind of when you were the monopoly and times are getting tougher. I don't think the outlook is great for them.
Yeah, so, and they're one-offs, as Nick pointed out. So you can't do them every year. So, you know, it's a one-off increase, which helped earnings rally 34%, the profit after tax. But that, I presume, is not going to be repeated next year.
Correct, especially if, you know, I mean, we actually relatively recently added NISPAS on the basis that we believe that there must be a value unlock, that this concentration is excessive. So I think if I was running the JSE, I'd be a little bit uncomfortable, not so much with the new players. They, I think, will just sort of eat away at some of the margin, but just, you know, the fact that, let's be honest, the JSE may not be as appealing as it once was. And let's also be honest, you know, the likes of Steinhoff also didn't do South Africa Incorporated any good.
No. Okay, moving to SA Inc. There's a question on ShopRite, and especially given, I guess, worries about SA Inc. The economy is under massive pressure. And it says, I've been watching ShopRite for a couple of months and I'm looking for an opportunity to buy for a long-term hold. It seems to get support just above 200 Rand a share. Any comments or concerns regarding buying below 210 Rand? So as you can see, trading there at 209 Rand, down 3.5% today.
Yep.
Nick?
So in brief, I think it's a quality company. I think this is certainly a company that you want to have at a time. In your portfolio. However, it all comes down to the price that you buy it at. So 100% spot on, perhaps at 280 earlier in March this year, or 270, you're paying up for this quality asset. If I were to be honest, I think I would probably hold out a little bit longer. I think if you have a look at the consumer under pressure as it is, you have a look at inflation and obviously the effect that the pass-through in terms of volumes that come through into these food retailers, it's not there. It's expected to be relatively benign going forward, possibly not falling off a cliff, but certainly not a very quick turnaround. From a growth kind of perspective. And then as the more recent sort of trading updates slash results talked about, I mean, these guys have had excellent couple of years of results in Africa, and the currency now starting to weigh in on that. And it's still not an inexpensive share even at these levels. So I would hold out a little bit longer, but I'd be certainly looking for that opportunity to add.
Yeah. Graham, do you think you'll get that opportunity?
I think you will, because I think Nick summarized it beautifully that they still make 80% of their profits in South Africa. So it's still very much exposed to that. There hasn't been a lot of inflation, a fiercely competitive environment. Pick and Pay is finally, after a decade of slumber, finally getting going. So I think it's going to be a very, very difficult market to try and grow the top line. I think they've also been rolling out stores into sort of more affluent areas where I think the break even is quite long for those new stores. So I can't remember the multiple. What's it, 23, something like that? You know, maybe earnings growth rates half that. You're talking about maybe 10, 12%. Great company. I agree 100% with Nick. Wonderful African footprint, but it's expensive, and I don't think you're going to get an unwind. So my guess is probably 170, 180 would be a good buying level. It sounds daft, you know, 200. But as Nick says, it was 270 bucks not so long ago. And I think as reality sets in, I think you may very well find them there. And if you don't get them there, the alternative is you just wait. Mm. And it could very well spend the next year at 200 bucks, get the results, and then you buy it a year from now at 200, makes a whole lot more sense.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think, I mean, we've seen this before. So, I mean, if you just have a look at another quality company in apparel retail, something like Mr. Price, the darling of the market, going to grow forever, set of disappointing results, so obviously expensive factoring and continued growth for a significant period of time. I think trading around 280 came all the way back to 140. Now, if you'd waited, you would have thought it's never going to get to 140 in a month of Sundays. And maybe you picked it up because you're never going to time the bottom. But at 150, 160, it was showing a lot of sort of value on a quality sort of asset. So these opportunities do present themselves. And for long-term money, you would rather hold out sit on the edge and wait for the opportunity opposed to get in because it's better than sitting in cash or, you know, find out you're way too hasty with regard to making these decisions.
It's all about ultimately generating a return. And if you pay an excessive multiple, whatever that might be, 20, 24, you may just not generate any performance. So it can be a great company, it can continue to grow, it can continue to have an impact in Africa, but you may not make money on a three-year view if you pay 210. So it's eventually down to, it's that. What price are you prepared to pay for the units of growth? And our view is on a peg of probably ballpark two. I'm sorry, I'm just not, don't see any merit in it.
It's amazing though how much self-restraint it takes, especially when you've got your eye on a share and you think, I just... damn it, I want this. I want to buy it. It's like when you want to buy something.
A pair of shoes.
Yes, you become obsessed with it and then you just have to have it.
Yep. Or a house.
Or a house.
You tell yourself you're going to have self-restraint. You go and you find the house and you fall in love and then, yeah, you'll pay almost any price for it within reason. So
it is tough. It is tough. Regressing it.
Make no mistake.
Yeah. Okay.
But it comes down to a basic principle. What are you trying to do? People invest because you're trying to generate return. You're not trying to build a portfolio of lovely shares. You know, you actually want to buy things that you're going to make money out of. So it can be a great company. It's like Bidvest. You know, Bidvest was trading on a 20 multiple for a long time. It's a, let's be honest, it's a GDP plus revenue and earnings story. And you've seen that those shares slowly coming down to earth. And let's not forget...
It hasn't been that slow, Graham.
No.
No,
it hasn't been that slow. But also, we're in a global... the tightening monetary environment. That's going to just take the froth out of these things.
Yeah. This is a question from a clearly embittered Vodacom customer saying, is this utility a hold or am I just having to pay more for a data bundle to increase its earnings?
So
someone's benefiting, but clearly not this person.
No, not yet. So I think it's a good company. I think the industry is... facing regulatory challenges and is not necessarily that attractive. However, I think at the prices that, let's say, Vodacom was a month ago, around about the 120 level, there was just too much bad news and too much regulatory pressure in that sort of share price in a quality sort of company. A company certainly that isn't about top-line growth because they do have, I would say, mature areas of the business where the revenue will decline, but they do have things like data where it will add to it. And I think with Safaricom and that sort of acquisition last year, you now have value-added services. You have the, it's not real yet, but you've got the idea that there's potentially a African growth sort of vector story as well. And it's not reflected at all in the shares. It's great cash, and you get a lot of that back in sort of dividends. So again, it's one of those right prices. You know, a Vodacom at 180 Rand, a scary thing to behold, but at 120 Rand, it's a quality company, and that, in my view, was pretty much the right price.
Yeah. Graham, I'll get your thoughts after the break, and if you'd like to send questions, please do SMS them to us, stock in the question to 41392, or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Let's take a look at what is happening to U.S. markets at the moment. We've got the S&P 500 up 0.33%. The Nasdaq is up 0.9%. The Dow Jones is trading 0.1% weaker. Apple, of course, is now a $1 trillion market cap company. Everyone's wildly excited about this. So no doubt helping lift the US markets. And across the Atlantic, we've had the FTSE 100 pulling back 1% today, and the CAC 40 and the DAX also giving up. I'm not sure when those gains were, but they've had a couple of pretty weak sessions, and we had a really little humdinger of a negative day. And still with me in studio are Graham Koerner and Nick Krell. Graham, we were talking about Vodacom. The question being, is this utility a hold, or are you just paying too much for data bundles to increase their earnings? So sort of the satisfaction, a dubious sense of satisfaction from this company. Nick, was his argument is that it was just way too cheap at 120 Rand. It's trading at about 130 Rand now. Would you buy it?
So when you look at the dividend yield, you would say, of course you buy it. But when you say, okay, well, the multiple is a little bit rich, and we're not entirely sure where the dividend goes. So I think we are still, as South Africans, paying way too much for data, and we still pay way too much for voice. And I think that the game changer is going to be, you know, a proliferation of fiber where people communicate in different ways. So I respectfully differ. I think the yield is great. It is a good company. It's well placed, but it's in a potentially a sunset industry where the sun could actually go down quite quickly. Mm-hmm. Because of a few technology factors. I agree, Safaricom and maybe digital payments and convergence technology, that could really put them on a different path. But until that really starts biting, I do worry that it's a utility with a shrinking utilitarian base. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Moving abroad, Capital, locally listed, but focused abroad, Capital & Counties, is this the buy of the decade?
No.
Can you elaborate?
I think I've answered the question. First off, I think you're in the UK, and at the moment you're effectively taking a big bet on what's going to happen with Brexit and what's going to happen with that currency.
And really, let's face it, no one knows, including Theresa May and her cabinet, which is increasingly shrinking.
Indeed, indeed. So it's a bit of a tenuous sort of link. I think if you think that it's going to be a very soft Brexit, ultimately they will continue, especially in London, being sort of, the centre of the financial world for everything out of the US, at least in Europe, then arguably I think there's definitely some value here. But you're making a bet on that opposed to the fundamental assets themselves. Assets are split up. I think one half excellent, and the other half more the development, so the retail side, excellent sort of assets, largely also I think benefiting off. Sorry, Corey, you've got
no,
a question.
No, carry on.
Largely benefiting off. A lot of tourism that sort of comes in at that sort of point.
And if there's, because there is a proposal to split, isn't there?
Covent Gardens and Mills, yeah.
I mean, would you buy them ahead of the split, or would you say, actually, no, Covent Gardens is the only asset that you want. You don't want the Earl's Court Lily Farm development, and you would actually wait post-unbundling and then get involved?
I'd probably wait post, because I think Monsieur Barnier has got a different view on whether there's going to be a soft Brexit. So I think every time Theresa May says, here's a plan, they say, no, try again. Because what the UK is trying to do is frankly craft something that works for them. But I think the truth of it is the Europeans are saying, we really are not going to give you a soft Brexit, because that will encourage other people who we really want to remain part of our little clique. We desperately want to discourage anybody from an easy exit.
The UK does have the card that they were a significant contributor to the European budget. So, I mean, I'm surprised. Anyway, that's another discussion, but I'm surprised that they haven't been able to use that in their negotiations.
Well, I think at the moment they're desperately trying to sort of dictate some of the rules. So, we want to stay part of the trade bloc, but we don't want to yield to your courts and immigration rules and things like that. So I think it's going to be messy. The problem with trophy assets is they command trophy asset prices in a happy world. The truth of it is a lot of people will still want to live in London, for example, and even post-Brexit probably will continue to do so. But I think for the next 3 or 4 years, it's going to be difficult. And when you've got kind of developmental assets, and let's be honest, the retail world is going through massive tectonic shifts. Lots of high street shops are closing down. Somebody was saying the other day in Switzerland, for example, how, you go through the high street and it's not exactly all peaches and cream. So I think there's a lot happening there. I would rather just wait. And then you say, right, I like Covent Gardens or I like Earl's Court for whatever reason. And then you buy the one you want. Yeah.
Yeah. Coming back home, please ask your guests their opinion on CAP, KAP. It's been dropping over the past few weeks. Also, an opinion on Old Mutual as a buy until the unbundling. And I think what they're referring to here is the splitting out of Nedbank. Nick, CAP International?
Yep, so I like it. I think it's a good business. It is not a sexy business by any stretch of the imagination. I think there are a couple of headwinds it has faced, largely being its ties into Steinhoff, its ownership and current still its sort of heavy ownership from a Steinhoff sort of perspective into the company itself. So, post-December and our sort of elections, ANC elections at that point, companies like Bidvest ratcheted up significantly. CAP did not. It stayed relatively flat. And then certainly as the sort of EM sell-off has sort of taken place, and you've watched companies like Bidvest derate significantly, CAP has been part of that as well. Fundamentally, the company, I think, has good assets. They run it quite differently, where, as discussed, you've got you've got plastics and bedding, etc., that goes into it. Competitive moat type of businesses, so companies really like. There have been one or two sort of issues in one or two of their operations operations as well, specifically a ramp up in one of their operations, HOSAF. So that hasn't happened as expected. So it was over budget and over time. Okay. So that has had a material or an effect, a negative effect on the shorter term earnings. But I think longer term, the prognosis is still good. The valuation is solid. And I think the assets are quality assets.
Yeah. Graham, I mean, it might muddle around for a while because I suppose Sinov still has quite a chunk of cap, don't they? They wouldn't end, and they're going to have to sell that down to realize money. So could that be a potential depressant?
It's one of the flowers that they're going to cut to water the weeds, I think, being Steinhoff. So I think it's a good business. I think everything Nick says is right. Maybe more recently, you know, a lot of SA Inc. stocks, consumer-oriented stocks, have been coming in for kind of a harder landing. So I think it is not just the Steinhoff overhang. I think it's actually the fact that quite a few SA retail type stocks or consumer oriented stocks have come off the boil. But it is well run. It's got a good portfolio. And although it's not, as you said, it's not sexy, it's a more sexy business today than it was 3 years ago.
Certainly.
With a few acquisitions. Far more diversified and a well-run business. But I think, like so much of SA Inc., you know, you've got a consumer that is massively under pressure. And, you know, if you're selling plastic bottles, ultimately you're quite reliant on what's happening there. And you've already seen, I mean, you look at Nielsen Research, people cutting back in some sort of key areas. So I think for the short term, it's going to battle with a lot of other companies in that sort of space.
Yeah. And Old Mutual, if you as a buy until the unbundling of Nedbank, or would you rather just kind of wait for it to happen and then assess it on its really this time its own merits?
Mm. So I think, I mean, as it stands at the moment, I'd probably wait. I also don't think that the industry as a whole, life insurance at the moment is a fantastic industry, an industry you've got to get into. So I don't think there's any sort of rush on that sort of front. And prefer to actually see it once unbundled, where it settles, now the, you know, 100% standalone and where it's sort of going. Obviously, there has been a value unlock from Quilter already and into Old Mutual, but it is a good asset. It does have a lot of sort of market share and dominance, but I would be hesitant to get in at the moment.
Yeah, great.
Question is, do you want to own Nedbank, okay? Or do you want to own Standard Bank or Absa or First Rand or Investec? Do you have a specific desire to own Nedbank? Because otherwise what you're doing is you're really just making a play for Old Mutual, which I think is probably trading at a relatively big discount to its peer group. So I'd probably wait and see how that pans out. Also, looks as though asset markets are coming in for a soft landing. Ultimately, their share price is geared to what's happening in asset markets. So I would wait, quite frankly. And no disrespect to Nedbank, but I think I'd rather buy one of the other banks that have got maybe stronger African growth prospects. Look, EcoBank was a nice turnaround, and that obviously made the recent update look a whole lot better. But I'd rather have something that I own, that I can direct, that I can dictate, rather than having a 25, I think it is, percent holding in EcoBank.
Yeah, okay. I'm getting to stock picks this evening. So we did mention NASPAS and how the JSE would really not want to see it having looking for offshore listings, for example, which has been one of the discussions. But Nick, you're looking at Tencent in particular. Mm. So why? Because given that NASPAS, I guess, is a cheap way into Tencent, why would you rather buy Tencent on its own?
Well, I think, I mean, if you have a look over the last couple of months, you've seen actually the discount start to reduce quite significantly from a NASPAS perspective. So Tencent has come under a lot of duress from a height of probably 476 all the way down to, I think, around 340 Hong Kong dollars. Mm. So you're talking 27-28% down with fundamental earnings drivers over the sort of the medium to long term, which are spectacular. So from a valuation perspective, with long term in mind, this is a fantastic sort of entry point. I do think, and so there is a caveat to this, we do on the 15th of August expect their Q2 numbers, Tencent, and I think the expectation is they'll probably be a little bit soft. So it then comes down to 27% derating. In the shorter term, maybe there's a little bit more weakness, maybe there's not. But either way, if you're looking for an asset over the long period of time, this price is very attractive.
Yeah, okay.
And I would agree with the logic. And I think maybe because the comparative was pretty good, and maybe people will be a little bit disappointed. But the Great Firewall of China is good for them.
Yeah. But it is not also your stock pick this evening, Graham. You're going for Reinet.
No, I'm going for Reinet. And I'll tell you why. discounts. You know, we were looking at Naspers a little while ago and started buying a few exactly on that basis. It was trading at a 30% plus discount to what we thought was a fair value, not taking at that point a bullish view on Tencent. When you look at Raynet, it's trading at a 40% discount. So effectively, you know, you get everything other than BAT for nothing. So we think that discount is excessive. If you look at the BAT results, very, very strong. And I think Reynolds acquisition will continue to power them ahead. But like Vodacom is in a sunset industry, let's be honest, tobacco is in a sunset industry. Arguably, these guys are doing more with, you know, heat, no smoke and sort of vaping technology to try and extend the life of it. But it's a cheap way of buying British American Tobacco, which generates nice cash. Unfortunately, all of it goes to management fees, but that's besides the point. But I think a 40% discount is just too big for this thing. Yeah. It's almost the case, I think, heads you win, tails you won't lose in it because of the excessive discount.
And hopefully maybe management doesn't take all the fees and actually does something with the cash that comes into the business.
Hopefully,
we've been saying this for 10 years, but we have to leave there, unfortunately. Graham, Nick, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Graham Kern is from Kerner Perspective. Nick Crail is from Ashburton Investments. Thanks for watching and your questions. And we will be back with Stockwatch on Monday evening at 7:30. Stock picks this evening. So we did mention Naspers and how the JSE would really not want to see it having looking for offshore listings, for example, which has been one of the discussions. But Nick, you're looking at Tencent in particular. Mm. So why? Because given that Naspers, I guess, is a cheap way into Tencent, why would you rather buy Tencent on its own?
Well, I think, I mean, if you have a look over the last couple of months, you've seen actually the discount start to reduce quite significantly from a Naspers perspective. So Tencent has come under a lot of duress from a height of probably 476 all the way down to, I think, around 340 Hong Kong dollars. Mm. So you're talking 27-28% down with fundamental earnings drivers over the sort of the medium to long term, which are spectacular. So from a valuation perspective, with long term in mind, this is a fantastic sort of entry point. I do think, and so there is a caveat to this, we do on the 15th of August expect their Q2 numbers, Tencent, and I think the expectation is they'll probably be a little bit soft. So it then comes down to 27% derating. In the shorter term, maybe there's a little bit more weakness, maybe there's not. But either way, if you're looking for an asset over the long period of time, this price is very attractive.
Yeah, okay.
And I would agree with the logic. And I think maybe because the comparative was pretty good, and maybe people will be a little bit disappointed. But the Great Firewall of China is good for them.
Yeah. But it is not also your stock pick this evening, Graham. You're going for Raynet.
No, I'm going for Raynet. And I tell you why. Discounts. You know, we were looking at Naspers a little while ago and started buying a few exactly on that basis. It was trading at a 30% plus discount to what we thought was a fair value, not taking at that point a bullish view on Tencent. When you look at Raynet, it's trading at a 40% discount. So effectively, you know, you get everything other than BAT for nothing. So we think that discount is excessive. If you look at the BAT results, very, very strong. And I think Reynolds acquisition will continue to power them ahead. But like Vodacom is in a sunset industry, let's be honest, tobacco is in a sunset industry. Arguably, these guys are doing more with, you know, heat, no smoke and sort of vaping technology to try and extend the life of it. But it's a cheap way of buying British American Tobacco, which generates nice cash. Unfortunately, all of it goes to management fees, but that's besides the point. But I think a 40% discount is just too big for this thing. Yeah. It's almost the case, I think, heads you win, tails you won't lose in it because of the excessive discount.
And hopefully maybe management doesn't take all the fees and actually does something with the cash that comes into the business.
Hopefully,
we've been saying this for 10 years, but we have to leave there, unfortunately. Graham, Nick, thanks very much for joining us this evening. Graham Kern is from Kerner Perspective. Nick Crail is from Ashburton Investments. Thanks for watching and your questions. And we will be back with Stockwatch on Monday evening at 7:30.